This week on Making Contact.
El narcotráfico como la...
Drug trafficking and armed groups are part of a social conflict. The policy of the U.S. doesn't help. It requires a deep democratization of the country.
Plan Colombia began in 2000 as an effort by the Clinton administration to reduce cocaine production in Colombia and stop the growing leftist guerrilla insurgency. The Bush administration says Plan Colombia is a big success. On this edition, we'll visit rural farmers and urban shantytowns and talk with high-ranking Colombian politicians to learn about the serious problems with the plan. I'm independent radio producer Reese Erling, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. Street vendors in the Colombian capital of Bogotá sell their wares as men line up in front of the sprawling offices of the Ministry of Defense. Inside, Jorge Uribe, the country's Minister of Defense, agrees with the U.S. view that Plan Colombia has been successful. He says it cut back on the growing of coca, the raw material for cocaine.
We have brought down the planting of coca leaves from up to 160,000, I repeat, 160,000 hectares, down to about 80,000. The decision of the Colombian government and people is we're going to combat the drug trade with every strength that we have.
UN figures confirm a big reduction in coca planting over the last 5 years. But critics say the drug cartels have adapted to the widespread aerial fumigation of coca plantations. Antonio Navarro is a senator from the leftist party, the Independent Democratic Pole.
I was in a helicopter in Putumayo province. The pilot told me, look, before there used to be huge plantations growing coca, and now there are a lot of small ones. Look there and there. Look at the small ones.
Drug traffickers are still producing large amounts of coca, but on smaller farms. They've also improved harvesting techniques and imported coca leaf from neighboring countries. As a result, according to UN figures, the overall production of cocaine in Colombia has remained more or less steady since 2000. Alfredo Rangel is director of the Security and Democracy Foundation of Colombia, a centrist think tank.
The retail price in the street for the consumer hasn't really changed, up or down. The purity of the cocaine has also improved. So this would indicate that production has remained stable.
My name is Sandro Calvani. I'm the head of the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime in Colombia.
Calvani says a cocaine baron operates just like any other captain of industry.
The production is strongly linked with consumption. So if the world demand remains more or less stable, of course the narcotraffickers, who are the industrial managers of this market, adapt to the situation in order to be able to supply the market.
Both the U.S. and Colombian governments have access to those statistics. So how do they explain the stable prices for cocaine on the streets of the U.S.? Minister of Defense Uribe.
If the demand is stable, if the supply is being controlled, why doesn't the price move? I am a businessman and an economist. I don't have an explanation.
Uribe goes on to speculate that perhaps demand in the U.S. and Europe is increasing, although he offers no proof. Congressman Gustavo Petro of the leftist Independent Democratic Pole gives another explanation. He says Plan Colombia and the Colombian government destroyed some cartels while allowing others to flourish.
La política antinarcóticos.
The counter-narcotics policy from the White House is pro-mafia. It doesn't reduce the cost of cocaine in the U.S. The price remains steady, which is in the interest of the mafia.
Que es precisamente el principal interés de la mafia.
Congressman Petro is no conspiracy theorist and doesn't accuse the U.S. government of consciously aiding the drug cartels, but he says the policies behind Plan Colombia result in a steady, continuing supply of cocaine to the U.S., and that benefits the drug traffickers. The cornerstone of Plan Colombia has been the aerial spraying of coca fields. Defense Minister Uribe insists that such fumigation is safe and key to reducing the coca crop.
The main tool within the eradication of drugs is the aerial spraying of coca plantations, in which, again, we have been very successful. We are coming from figures, as I said, of over 160,000 hectares to 70,000 to 80,000 hectares at the maximum. And we are continue pounding, and we will continue doing so.
But that pounding feels considerably different to peasants in the fields. Even farmers in neighboring Ecuador complain about Colombian aerial fumigation. In 2002, Santiago Tanguila took me on a walk through the lush green forest in San Francisco Dos, Ecuador, less than a mile from the Colombian border. We pass an occasional withered mango tree and dead coffee plant.
Los aviones empiezan a fumigar.
The planes doing the spraying don't make any noise. We only hear the helicopters accompanying them. Then we know there's aerial spraying going on. This liquid comes out and covers everything. It's drifting over from the Colombian side. It wrecks our agriculture. It affects everything we grow.
The Colombian military and U.S. contractors are spraying Roundup Ultra, an herbicide manufactured by the St. Louis-based Monsanto Corporation. Roundup is widely used as a weed killer in commercial agriculture. Both the U.S. government and Monsanto say the herbicide is safe when applied properly. In the U.S., Roundup Ultra is not supposed to be sprayed while people are working in the fields, and anyone applying it should wear protective clothing. That's not what happens in either Colombia or Ecuador, says Tanguila. The planes appear suddenly and just spray anyone and anything that's in the fields.
The herbicide companies say nothing is happening. They say it's no more dangerous than taking a vitamin pill. That's a lie. These vitamins are not fit for human consumption. They kill our crops. Little kids suffer stomach infections, headaches, and vomiting. That's permanent around here. The Red Cross came by, and we went to local clinics. They weren't familiar with this kind of illness, so they didn't do anything. Then we tried our local indigenous medicines. Those worked and gave us some relief.
Peasants in both Ecuador and Colombia say that Roundup spraying is causing damage to the environment. It not only kills coca plants, but legitimate crops as well, they say. The UN's Calvani disagrees. He says coca growing and cocaine production are the true destroyers of the environment. He says Roundup is safe.
You have to compare with the environmental impact of coca production. Every hectare of coca destroys 3 or 4 hectares of primary forest. So coca crops by itself is the worst possible damage to the environment. These kind of chemicals which are used against coca are widely used all over the world in control of a golf field or a rice field all over the world. So it's not a chemical which is used only for this purpose.
Opposition to fumigation doesn't just come from peasant farmers and leftists. General Manuel José Bonet is former commander of the Colombian Armed Forces. He opposes the aerial spraying and favors manual eradication of coca plants instead.
Even when I was in the service as general, I always was questioning the fumigation. I can't see the effect, the real effect of the fumigation. I recommend to the government the employee of the families. Probably we will have more time working, but the work will be more effective. If you buy machetes and you may employ 20,000 persons or families, and they receive the task of clearing hectares, and you may see that.
Bonet says that widespread aerial spraying also takes political control away from locally elected officials. The Colombian Army and U.S. military advisors dictate what land is sprayed and when, without any local consultation.
The mayors and the city authorities, they are not really the authorities. When the police appear with the helicopters and the Americans to fumigate, the mayor can't say nothing.
It's taking away the control from the local authorities and giving it to the police and the Americans.
That goes against one of the major objectives of the plan, which is to restore the governance.
Plan Colombia is not only or even mainly aimed at cocaine eradication. The U.S. has provided billions in military aid to wipe out the country's 40-year-old guerrilla insurgency. The Marxist guerrillas don't receive any significant money or support from abroad, so the government can't argue they are tools of some foreign communist power. In recent years, the U.S. and Colombian governments have argued that leftist guerrillas have taken over from the drug cartels and are now narco-terrorists. Defense Minister Uribe.
Today, they are nothing but one big mass of criminals who are being fed and fueled by the money of the drugs. There is no longer any political motivation of any nature, which some of them did have years ago. They themselves have become a criminal actor in the whole play.
What is the connection, if any, between drug dealing and the guerrillas? Supporters of the main guerrilla group, FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, concede that the guerrillas are taxing peasants who grow coca and the drug dealers who buy it. But leftist Senator Navarro, who used to be a member of the 1970s guerrilla group M19, says it goes further than that.
Perhaps 20 years ago, the FARC opposed coca growing. It used to tell peasants that if they planted a hectare, they had to plant a hectare of other crops. But the peasants didn't like that. Little by little, that changed. Nowadays, the FARC is promoting coca cultivation. They tell the peasants to grow it. They encourage traffickers to bring seeds. They let the traffickers do their business and then charge them a tax. Most of their money comes from their relations with peasants and local drug dealers, not from trafficking outside the country.
FARC supporters deny that the guerrillas are that heavily involved in the drug trade, and the charges are difficult to verify. But whatever FARC's actual involvement, the U.S. and Colombian governments clearly exaggerate that role for political purposes. Centrist think tank director Alfredo Rangel.
Some of the government propaganda tries to not recognize the political character of the FARC. They want to reduce it to a drug cartel. That's a half-truth. The guerrillas use resources from drugs to arm its combatants. That doesn't make them a cartel. In fact, that distorts reality.
Since President Álvaro Uribe was elected in 2002, the government has claimed to have forced the guerrillas into retreat. Then in February 2005, the guerrillas killed 50 government soldiers in well-planned attacks in different parts of the country. These were the worst military clashes since Uribe came to power. Rangel says it's wrong to simply dismiss the guerrillas as terrorists.
The guerrillas have the capacity to conduct war against the army. The actions are sustainable. The guerrillas have their own officers, uniforms, a specific plan, and a military strategy. They also have a public political objective. They want some reforms in Colombia.
Rangel points out that Colombia's guerrillas occasionally engage in terrorist tactics, such as kidnappings or bombings, in which civilians are killed, but that doesn't make them a terrorist organization.
Terrorism is a tactic in the struggle, just like guerrilla war is a tactic. Sometimes the Colombian army uses tactics similar to the guerrillas, but that doesn't make them guerrillas. So in the same way, occasionally, the guerrillas use terrorist tactics, but that is just a tool. It doesn't make them a terrorist group.
Senator Navarro says Plan Colombia has clearly not stopped the guerrillas.
President Uribe has adopted the rhetoric of President Bush. For Uribe, there is no internal conflict, only terrorism. He equates the FARC with Islamic terrorists. That's completely wrong. It is a policy that relies on force.
Senator Navarro and many others say the government must find a political solution to the guerrilla insurgency. They say the government's emphasis on military means has only led to widespread human rights abuses by the military and police. Defense Minister Uribe concedes that there have been human rights violations in the past.
That has been a fact that I cannot deny, and I don't want to deny it. As a matter of fact, as minister, I accept it, especially because it gives me all the basic and the strength to combat it. And we are involved in a governmental effort at all levels to bring down the occurrence of these human rights abuses. Having recognized there have been cases, every day there are less and less.
But that's not what human rights groups say. Walking into her modest office, Gladys Avila sits down to explain how the military cooperates with the right-wing paramilitaries. Avila is a leader of the Association of the Families of the Detained and Disappeared. She describes how the right-wing paramilitaries kidnapped one girl with help from elements in the Colombian military.
There was a very sad case of a 15-year-old girl. Her family belonged to the Communist Party, a legal and legitimate party in our country. She was on a bus that was stopped by the military. She was held all day. Then at night, she was taken away in a civilian car.
The girl's family, who lived in a rural area outside Bogota, was extremely worried when she didn't return home.
The next day, the paramilitaries took the girl in a pickup, looking for the girl's family. They wanted to find the whole family and wipe them out.
The girl, who had no history of political activism herself, was never found. Crimes such as these were commonplace in Colombia. The military and the paramilitaries rarely face arrest or punishment. The Colombian legislature is now debating an amnesty law for the paramilitaries in which the top leaders may serve short jail sentences, but military crimes often go unpunished. Human rights leader Avila says that whatever law passes, the perpetrators of serious crimes, whether paramilitaries or government officials, must face justice.
Es muy importante que los victimarios paguen sus responsabilidades.
The perpetrators must pay for what they have done. For us, it's not a question of negotiations, because the state helped create these groups and is responsible for their many human rights violations. The state must make them pay.
Congressman Petro says, unfortunately, human rights violations continue unabated despite provisions in Plan Colombia to reduce them.
In the last 20 years, various governments have told foreigners the same thing, that they are going to end human rights violations. But 20 years go by, and we've got a tsunami of human rights violations.
We'll have more about Plan Colombia in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or to order cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. Or visit us on the web at radioproject.org. Plan Colombia is most often discussed in the context of slowing cocaine smuggling in the U.S., but coca is a problem for Colombians as well. About 3% of the Colombian population is addicted to drugs, according to UN figures. The rich snort coke. The poor find other alternatives. Here in one of Bogota's shanty towns, men break up pieces of wood for recycling. Claudia Cordoba, who works for the anti-poverty group Children of the Andes, describes this district where drug dealers hang out and street children play.
This is an industrial zone with many big factories. It's a very old neighborhood of Bogota. The displaced people put up shacks on an old railroad track.
People are so poor here that kids sniff glue or take a hit of basuco as the only affordable way to get high. Basuco is made from the chemicals drained off from processing cocaine and often contains acids and other poisons. It costs less than a penny a hit.
Everything is inside the shacks. They have animals there, horses and dogs. Around 7 or 8 at night, they take the children out in the street. The parents send the children into the streets while they work or sell drugs or whatever.
Jaime Jaramillo is president of Children of the Andes. He says poverty, especially among displaced peasant farmers, often leads to drug abuse.
Many people come from the countryside looking for a big dream, but the big dream doesn't exist because as soon as they came down to the city is wild, and they lost the money, their possessions, and then in order to survive, they have to use drugs or doing a lot of things that they never wanted to do.
Jaramillo says most middle-class people here still think drugs are a problem only affecting people outside Colombia.
Many times we as Colombians are like mothers. They don't want to accept that their daughters are not virgin. Could be 15, 16, 18, 20 years old and they're still thinking that they are just virgin because we don't want to see the real situation. And if we don't open our minds, how we can prevent the big problem that is drugs?
Leftist Senator Navarro of the Independent Democratic Poll says there are political and social consequences to ignoring Colombia's domestic drug problems.
The problem of addiction is growing, especially Basuco. That's a public health problem. Can we deal with both guerrilla and drug problems at the same time? We should solve one before attacking the other.
And that raises an interesting problem. Plan Colombia focuses on eradicating cocaine, mainly through military means. But are there other ways to solve the cocaine problem? Everyone in Colombia, from left to right, says the battle must begin by reducing drug consumption in the U.S.
It's important for the U.S. to reduce the demand for drugs. In a capitalist society, when you have demand, you have supply. A lot of people in the north think cocaine isn't that bad. A man told me, you drink alcohol and feel bad the next day, but you snort coke and feel fine the next day.
Senator Navarro and others on the left in Colombia say solving the drug problem won't be easy. There must be a multi-pronged approach to slow demand in the U.S. while reducing poverty in Colombia. Congressman Gustavo Petro is also a member of the Independent Democratic Poll.
El narcotráfico como la lucha armada.
Drug trafficking and armed groups are part of a social conflict. The policy of the U.S. doesn't help. The best tool to solve this problem is giving peasants land in productive areas. This is not crop substitution, it's land substitution. Give people land. But the current government of the United States thinks any land reform is communist.
Congressman Petro says the government must undercut the political and economic power of the drug cartels.
It requires a deep democratization of the country. Peasants need full equality and access to the cities. That would reduce influence of drug dealers. If they lose their power with the political leaders, they would be easier to arrest.
Ultimately, says Congressman Petro, drugs must be decriminalized. Cocaine, heroin, and other hard drugs would remain illegal, but penalties would be lessened. He says drug abuse would become a public health problem, not a criminal issue.
Yo creo que la droga es negativa.
I think drugs are negative. Some are more negative than others. But the illness is not in alcohol itself. We can have policies that reduce and control these illnesses. If we criminalize these drugs, we create mafias. We don't have the tools to solve this problem. The tools definitely aren't jail. The tools must be within a public health policy.
But others, such as former General Bonet, disagree. They say decriminalizing hard drugs would allow the big cartels even greater freedom to operate and increase demand for drugs.
The problem with the drugs is not the problem with the whiskey. I personally don't agree with the decriminalization of the drugs. The United States are not doing enough to educate the young people in order to avoid the use of drugs. Here the same. Here because the consumption here is going up.
The UN's Calvani also opposes decriminalizing hard drugs.
Well, I think we can learn a lot of lessons from other illicit drugs, like, for example, alcohol and tobacco. Those countries who have done a very serious education program to reduce tobacco consumption among the youth in the school, or in particular a group at high risk, have got significant result. That shows that education works.
Calvani argues for better education in the U.S. and in Colombia.
The problem is to support and to sustain that elimination by investing in alternative development. That means by changing the attitude of people, which I call fumigate the brain. That means that the people change. But of course, first you have to eliminate the illicit crop and then convince the people not to get involved again and not to replant.
But changing those attitudes won't be easy. Here in a rural area 200 miles northwest of Bogota, peasants eke out a living raising corn and a few head of cattle. Farmers in this village don't grow coca because the climate is wrong, but everyone knows someone who does. Some farmers have rejected the allure of coca, which can generate more than 10 times the profits of legal crops.
My life is just work and nothing else.
No, no, your papa, he was in no hacer nada. Yo aquí mi trabajo.
I've got a plantation of banana down there, and that's all my job, and that's mm-hmm. what I do.
Bananas are more healthy than coca.
Yeah, it's much more healthy, of course. It is.
But another farmer notes that many people nearby grow coca.
They grow that up there, like more high in the mountains. He doesn't go up there often.
Okay. If he lived there, would he think about growing coca?
If there was nothing else to do, then I'll have to do it to earn some money.
So long as demand for cocaine remains strong in the U.S., farmers and drug traffickers here in Colombia will find a way to provide the drugs. 5 years of Plan Colombia, which has cost $3.5 billion, hasn't done much to change that reality. The Bush administration has introduced legislation to extend Plan Colombia for at least one more year, at a cost of $550 million. That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to Maria Perez Pla for arranging interviews in Bogota. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production made possible by generous gifts from people in the community. We are committed to providing a unique forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have ideas for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or CD copy of the program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. Or visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director. Justin Beck, associate producer. Brishen McKee, office manager. Dorian Taylor, outreach and distribution. Peggy Law, founding director. Norman Solomon, senior advisor. David Barsamian, national advisor. I'm your host and independent radio producer, Reese Ehrlich.